Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, November 27, the day after the market shut down, the day of the early market shutdown for Wall Street, the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and all other markets. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson, delighted to be with you for our weekly visit. I do hope your Thanksgiving Day holiday was an enjoyable one with friends and family. And when the invocation before the meal was said, I hope the person who delivered the invocation said, "Bless the hands that prepared it and bless the hands that produced it." Because we sometimes forget how fortunate we are to live in a land where we're able to produce enough food for our population. We have some problems of getting it to the right people at times, but overall, we're very successful, thanks to the farm and ranch families across the nation. Well, it was a 3.5-day holiday trading week, but boy, there was plenty of news and plenty of activity to look at. The day before Thanksgiving, Wall Street got a ton of reports. But the market did very little in the way of reacting. As a matter of fact, the day before Thanksgiving, the Dow went up just 1 point. And when we ended the week's trade today, the Dow was down for the day at 14 points and ended at 17,798. The S&P 500 gained just 1.25 points today to end the day and the week at 2,090. And the NASDAQ composite gained 11 points to end the week at 51.27. I've wondered for several years why we even open on the day after Thanksgiving and conduct a short trading session because so many of the traders make it a long holiday weekend. I can understand if there are some critical reports out, but there weren't any reports due out today. There were before the holiday. U.S. consumer spending barely rose in October, and anemic consumer spending did little to change expectations the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates at its December meeting. The Commerce Department said consumer spending edged up just 0.1% in October, suggesting that consumer spending, which accounts for more than 2/3 of U.S. economic activity, has slowed from the third quarter's brisk 3% annual rate. Also on Wednesday, a second report, the Commerce Department said non-defense capital goods orders, that's durable goods, jumped 1.3% last month after a 0.4% increase in September. And coming on the heels of data this month showing a solid increase in manufacturing output in October, that report suggested maybe the worst of the drag from the strong dollar and deep spending cuts by energy firms was over. But manufacturing, which accounts for 12% of the economy, has been slammed by the strong dollar and the spending cuts in the energy sector. And then there was the weekly claims for new unemployment benefits report. That data showed that last week we dropped to 260,000, and that was far more than expected by analysts, and probably we're looking at some employment figures that we haven't seen for years. Oh, all in all, it was quite a week. Consumer spending rising 0.2% in the 12 months through October, and the Commerce Department reporting new home sales jumped 10.7% in October, and that could put away some of the concerns of a significant slowdown in housing. Another area that increased in the report, savings. Savings increased to $762 billion. That's the highest level since December of 2012. So a lot of reports, but little price impact on the marketplace. And there were a few earnings reports this week. One that was watched with a great deal of interest was HP Incorporated, HP, which houses former Hewlett-Packard Company's legacy hardware business, dropped 16% on Wednesday after lackluster results fueled concerns about the ability of HP Incorporated to handle the slowdown in the sales of printers and personal computers, and HP Inc.'s revenue from both its printer and PC businesses fell 14% each in the fourth quarter. That's their worst performance in the year ended October 31st. And one analyst said things got worse. Not only did they not get better, they got worse. And then there was the other earnings report that was watched with a great deal of interest this week. Deere & Company, the day before Thanksgiving, reported a drop in quarterly earnings that was not as steep as Wall Street expected and also gave a less negative outlook than analysts had feared, saying it was well positioned to weather a worsening slump in demand for its farm equipment. Chief Financial Officer told analysts at a conference call that while the company is forecasting its third straight year of declines in sales of agricultural equipment, its main business in fiscal 2016, it also expects to remain solidly profitable. And when we take a look at a lot of these companies, we take a look at mergers and acquisitions because they are going on all the time. And before the earnings report was issued, I had the opportunity to sit down with Barry Nelson at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City, and the subject was consolidation in the industry. Mergers and acquisitions happening throughout every industry in the country, and Barry Nelson, who is the manager of public relations for John Deere & Company, tell me about the John Deere precision planting deal.
Right. We just recently reached an agreement with Climate Corp, and we were able to acquire Precision Planting, which is a great deal. We're extremely excited about that. Very innovative company. We feel that this will help us increase our product lineup with some new technology. They have great retrofit kits to help even used planters, competitive planters, become more efficient in the field. So in our opinion, it was a great acquisition to kind of fulfill the whole lineup of planter products that John Deere has to offer.
Planters have really changed over the past decade or two, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you make the case that it's how you put that seed in the ground at the beginning of the year is going to determine how successful you are with the yield. So it's critically important that you use the right technology with your planting equipment.
Now, besides the equipment, technology, websites, all that sort of thing, part of it too?
Right. Well, first of all, on the precision planting side of it,
right.
We want to make sure we maintain that brand. They have about 400 dealers. We're going to make sure we maintain that channel. So if you bought products from Precision Planting in the past, you'll continue to have that relationship with that retailer in the future. We want to help support that Precision Planting brand. It's an extension of the John Deere product lineup. The other part of the acquisition or the agreement with Climate Corp is we're also collaborating with them. They have a software platform called FieldView. So now we're going to make it a lot easier in cab, in our vehicles. So if a customer has FieldView and he wants to collect his data as he's going through the field, he can very easily upload it into the FieldView platform and then use it. He'll have complete control over that data, but send it to his crop consultant or to his crop advisor or whoever, you know, he approves to have that information. So we're kind of opening up our platform to make it, in this case, easily usable with the FieldView platform.
Now, this happened just a short time ago.
Right. This is all part of the Precision Planting Climate right. Corp agreement that we
So are John Deere dealers ready to serve customers with this technology?
Well, I have to say, we still have 60 to 90 days. There's a lot of administrative details, some
right.
regulations to make sure the agreement holds firm, and we're confident it will. But when we get everything completely signed, sealed, and delivered, then the John Deere dealers, some of them will become Precision Planting dealers, There's no requirements for that, but the option is there for them. They have to meet certain requirements to take on that contract also.
Right. We are continuing to fold in new companies, but the ultimate gain, I would guess, is global.
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of people don't know this one. We also announced last Monday that we acquired a planter company called Monosem. They're out of France in Europe, and they're a leading planter company there. They focus on specialty crops, and in the U.S., peanuts or some vegetable seeds and things like that in the U.S. and Canada. And so that also adds to our planter portfolio and allows us to do things more globally than we have in the past.
And the question I ask every year, Barry, how are we doing on tractor and combine sales in light of the lower grain prices?
Well, overall, equipment sales are down just right. because it is tied to a lot of the prices that our farmer customers are gaining. But this is a great opportunity now, especially with some of the used values that are out there. And if you take some of the technology that we now offer, you can buy a late model used tractor, combine, and put that technology on there, and it's almost as good as new. Plus, a lot of the dealers are offering good warranties and special incentives on those, too.
Thank you very much, Barry Nelson, who is Director of Public Relations for John Deere. And, yes, the downturn means maybe some pretty good buys out there, as he pointed out. Well, there's more to come. Stay with us as we take a look at the week's commodity and stock market reports on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
When we want to talk and learn more about agriculture in South America, there's one man we turn to rather quickly, Dr. Michael Cordonier. He is he's on the internet, known there as the soybean and corn advisor, and you can log in to see what he sees happening in part of the world that's one of our major competitors, certainly in soybean production, as well as in corn. So Max had the opportunity to visit with Dr. Mike this week, and with the recent election in Argentina that could change the complexion for Argentine farmers, Max's first question was, what kind of an impact will the election have for farmers in Argentina?
Well, I think this is going to be a new day for agriculture in Argentina. With the election of Macri, they're going from a very antagonistic relationship that the Kirchners had with the ag sector to a much more cooperative arrangement. Now, he has promised to eliminate the export taxes on both corn and wheat immediately, and then to reduce the export tax on soybeans. Now, this will result in a price increase for Argentine farmers. And then there probably is going to be a devaluation of the Argentine peso that, too, will result in price increases in Argentina. So there can be some immediate benefits for the farmers. And I think more long-term, this is very good news for the farmers in Argentina. They have been struggling for the last number of years. They've been sort of hamstrung by the government policies. And if those policies change, which the president-elect said he'll do, it's going to unleash the farmers in Argentina to, I think, produce a lot more wheat, corn, and soybeans.
There was immediate reaction to the market the other day after the weekend election on Sunday, and the market went down. Clearly, it's not friendly for the grain market overall or for the U.S. producers.
Yeah, immediately there will be a flush of soybeans coming out of Argentina. They have about 10 million tons of soybeans in storage, in those giant silo bags, and they've been waiting for a devaluation of the peso or a better price, and they might get both in the next few weeks or few months. So there will be a flush of soybeans coming out of Argentina. And you're right, down the road, Argentina will be a much more stronger competitor for U.S. producers because they're going to increase their grain production.
How quickly will President Macri down there act to end those export taxes or substantially lower them. That's a little bit in question, is it not?
Yes, it is. In fact, he has appointed a six-member economic team to start unwinding the currency controls, the export controls, all this interference in the commodity markets. But there is a disagreement as how fast they can do it. It might be days, might be weeks, might be months. No one quite knows for sure. But they would like to get rid of that excess, you know, storage of grain before the next harvest starts in February or March.
When I was there early in the year visiting with farmers down there in Santa Fe province, it was interesting listening to them. And you had the feeling that this is a very large sleeping monster here, or at least it could be much more significant factor in the world grain trade than it is now if those export taxes came off. Was I reading too much into it, Mike?
Well, in fact, just this morning, Los Global, one of the biggest producers of soybeans in Argentina, said within 3 years they might be able to increase the soybean production 30, 40, 50%. So there's going to be a big increase in soybean production. So I don't think they were overestimating the impact of this election. And the farmers, they do have the lowest cost production in the world. So they have very fertile soils, good climate, very low transportation cost. They just have been struggling with the government policies in recent years.
And that's gone on for quite a while, hasn't it? I mean, hasn't there always been a challenge in the government there as far as the farmers are concerned?
Yeah, well, the Kirchners were in power, both the current president and her husband who passed away. They've been in power for 12 years. And they've been micromanaging the economy more and more as days went by. So now they're finally rid of this and you got a more friendly regime coming in. So it's been a while. And in fact, a lot of the big ag conglomerates in Argentina, they moved out of the country. They went to Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia looking for new land because they said we can't make a profit here in Argentina. But now with the new president, that might all change.
But isn't there an even longer history in Argentina in terms of macroeconomic challenges where they've just really struggled through the years and it's affected farmers?
Well, you know, Argentina's been kind of going downhill for about 100 years economically. They were one of the biggest economies back in the early 1900s, and it's just been mismanaged ever since. So, yes, there's a long history of mismanagement. And I really feel sorry for the guys in Argentina. You know, they want to do a good job, of course, and they have all the potential for a great job. It's just been the economic policies of the government that's been constraining them.
Have they finished planting this crop? I guess there probably is still some acreage to put in Argentina, isn't there? And could we see a little bit of an increase or maybe some additional acres planted that would not have been otherwise? Or is that too much of a near-term reaction?
Well, as of late last week, the corn was 37% planted, and the soybeans are 31% planted. Now, that was about average for both crops. Now, they will resume planting their corn, the second phase of the corn planting here in a week or so. So this is like a normal planting pace. And that is the big question. Will these policies impact this year's production? Now, I have the corn acreage in Argentina down about 12%, but some people have it down 20, 30%. I think there might be a few more acres of corn and soybeans than what we thought, you know, going into the season with the new president. But it's probably too late in the cycle to make a big impact this year. I think the first big impact will come when they plant their next wheat crop, which would be next May or June. That wheat crop is going to, they're going to greatly increase the wheat acreage. And then I can see next year's corn crop in Argentina, maybe 4 million hectares, compared to this year's 3 million hectares. The farmers in Argentina want to plant more corn. And by eliminating that export tax, you give them a price increase. They all know that they have a monocrop of soybeans, basically, and that's not a good long-term agronomic practice. There are about 7 times more acres of soybeans than corn in Argentina. So they don't have basically any rotation, and they want to get back to that rotation. So these new policies will offer them that opportunity.
With your years of experience of watching that part of the world and its agriculture, is this election likely to result in significant outside investment in Argentina, for example, even from the United States or the global grain traders? Will they beef up their presence?
Yes, I think they will beef it up. And there already is talk about new investments in Argentina because they see the potential. Now, Argentina does have some more land they can bring into production, especially in the northern part of the country. And they can, you know, shift pasture and hay and that sort of stuff to row crop production, which they've been doing for a number of years. So, yes, I think you will see all the multinational ag companies taking a second look at Argentina now with the new regime.
It's hard to miss some of them there already. You drive down the road. We actually toured the biggest DeKalb corn processing plant of the world, and it dwarfed the Waterman, Illinois plant from all appearances.
Well, Argentina is a big place, and they got they do a lot of winter production down there, too, for U.S. A lot of that production moved over to Chile in recent years, but I think now with the new regime in Argentina, they may do more of that winter-type research and seed increase in Argentina.
What about Brazil? How are they getting along with their planting pace, and how is the weather in that country that you watch so closely?
Well, Brazil's been struggling. The rainfall has been very irregular in central Brazil, in the states of Mato Grosso, Goiás, and a little bit further east in Bahia. Brazil right now is 70% planted on soybeans. The average is 77%. But the weather in Brazil has been kind of strange. It's all been dictated by El Nino. The southern part of the country has been really, really hit hard by very heavy rains. For about a month now, in Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and up in the Paraná. So it's been way too wet in southern Brazil and irregularly dry in central Brazil. There are concerns that some of the top-end soybean yields may already have been lost in the central part of the country. There's been a lot of beans had to be replanted because the germination wasn't very good. The plant stands are below adequate. So there is an unease in Brazil.
It's not a crop in trouble, though, yet, right?
Just what I was going to say, but as we all know, soybean can start out pretty bad and end up pretty good if the weather cooperates. So right now, I would say all of this is sort of a concern, but not a problem as of yet. In fact, there's probably more concern for the second crop of corn than for the soybeans, because the delay in getting soybean plantings will push back that planting for the second crop of corn, and that is a concern, because about 65 to 70% of Brazil's corn crop is now planted as a double crop following soybeans. So that's the vast majority of Brazil's corn now is that second crop.
The man who probably knows as much about South American agriculture from his North American viewpoint than anybody I know, Dr. Mike Cordonier, who is on the website as Soybean and Corn Advisor, joining us here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The chemical industry, the crop protection industry, seems to be wrapped up in the courtroom more than in the fields. Dow Chemical Company this week said it expects environmental safety concerns about its new herbicide Enlist Duo to be resolved. The company said that Wednesday after the government asked a federal appellate court to pull regulatory approvals while the chemical safety is re-examined. The EPA approved Enlist Duo for sale and use in several U.S. states over a year ago, but the agency has since found its assessment of the product's two active ingredients was incomplete, according to court documents in that lawsuit. Enlist Duo is a new combination of herbicide aimed at combating weeds that have become resistant to glyphosate, which is the widely used herbicide and the active ingredient of Monsanto's Roundup product. Enlist Duo combines glyphosate with another chemical, 2,4-D, and is meant for use on corn and soybeans that have been genetically altered to tolerate it. But now, apparently, it's back to the courtroom. The EPA wants to study the product further after it found that the company's Dow AgroSciences unit claimed the two active ingredients work better together. And so EPA says, we have to take another look at this. And they look at a lot of stuff. And I would say they're probably not the favorite government agency that farmers and ranchers have to deal with. Well, let's take a look at where the markets will start trade on Monday when we finally get back to a regular five-day trading week once again. And so taking a look at where grain prices will start when we begin trade next week, the wheat market came under a lot of pressure on this shortened holiday trading day, with the December wheat contract dropping 13.5 cents. So it will start the trade this week at $4.65¾ a bushel. The other months didn't fare as badly. March and May dropped 8 cents a bushel for the day. Corn futures also coming under pressure, and so the December corn contract will start next week's trade at $3.59¼ a bushel. That's down 6.5 cents for the day. And looking ahead to new crop corn for next year, which one of our listeners said, can you take a look at December 2016? Well, we sure can, because today, December corn for 2016 ended at $3.90¼ a bushel, down 4.5 cents for the day. The soybean market didn't do as badly today, and so January soybeans will start trade next week at $8.73 a bushel after losing just 1.5 cents for the day. So that's where we'll start the trade in the grain market. Now, what about the livestock market? Well, as we take a look at closing prices for today, the December lean hog contract will start the week at $58.90 a hundredweight after gaining 10 cents today. But the other months, like the forward months, June of next year, dropped $1.07 a hundredweight today to $72.50. Cattle futures, on the other hand, a green screen after today's market closed. December live cattle will start the week at $131.82 a hundredweight, after a gain of 87 cents a hundredweight. And the January feeder cattle contract will start the week at $166, and that's a gain of $1.02 for the day today. The condition of the wheat crop improved only 1% in the weekly crop progress reports, going to 53%, good to excellent. That was up from 52% a week ago. But it seemed to me more of a downward impact on the market than a 1% improvement in the quality of the current wheat crop would indicate. And the problem with wheat, again, there is a world oversupply of wheat, and that means that we're just not competitive price-wise with the wheat market on world markets. The oil market continues under pressure as well. Energy stocks continuing to slide even lower. And for the month of November, the price of oil dropping over 8% for just 1 month alone. And here in Scottsdale, Arizona this week, I filled the gas tank with regular unleaded gasoline, paid $1.86 a gallon. I didn't think I'd probably ever see one in front of the price of a gallon of gasoline. I thought $2 would be about the best that we could do. So downward pressure in the markets from the standpoint of energy stocks. And now what about the holiday weekend shopping? Well, the early reports I saw for this Black Friday, disappointment in the size of the turnout on Thanksgiving night and in the size of the turnout for the early bird special on this Friday morning. Apparently, just didn't happen. Compared to a year ago, though, online shopping went up 22%. Well, thank you for joining us in this Thanksgiving week. That's our time. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.